Good afternoon, everyone. I call this meeting of the Senate Education Committee to order. It is 3:30 p.m. here on Monday, April 29th. We are in the Belts Committee room here in the State Capitol Building in Juneau. I just want to remind folks in the room to please mute your cell phones. If you're looking for the information for today's meeting, it is available on BASIS and also available right there by the door. Members present today are President Stevens, Senator Keel, Senator Gray Jackson, myself, Senator Lukey Gale Tobin. Please let the record reflect that we do have a quorum to conduct business. I want to thank Joseph from the Juneau LIO moderating and Mary Gwen from Senate Records for being here with us today. All right, folks, we have a packed agenda, so I'm going to ask folks to hear on the dais just to be thoughtful about the time they're spending asking questions. And try to keep your question concise. I'm going to also ask Mr. Griffin if you could also keep your responses concise so that we are able to get to public testimony and then on to the second order of business today. The first thing we have up is taking the confirmation hearing for the reappointment of Bob Griffin to the State Board of Education and Early Development. We will be taking public testimony today, followed by the first hearing for Senate Bill 266, Correspondence Study Programs, and we will be taking public testimony on SB 266. I want to let folks know right up here at the start that we will have a two-minute limit on public testimony for both Mr. Griffin and also for SB 266. For those who wish to call in and offer public testimony, you can call the following numbers. If you're calling from Anchorage, the phone number is 907-563-9085. If you're calling from Juneau, the number is 907-586-9085, and all other locations, please dial the toll-free number 1-844-586-9085. You can also go to your local legislative office to testify, and you can email us your public testimony to senate.education@akleg.gov. That's senate.education@akleg.gov. I do want to let folks know that we did have a briefing on the federal maintenance of equity on the agenda. It has been removed. We will continue to reach out to the Department of Education and Early Development to hear an update on maintenance of equity and the state compliance. First up today is the confirmation of the reappointment of Bob Griffin to the State Board of Education. Committee members should have a copy of Mr. Griffin's resume, and any documents that he asked to be presented to the committee have been uploaded to BASIS and are also available right over there by the door. Mr. Griffin has served on the State Board of Education since 2018 as the Senior Education Research Fellow at the Alaska Policy Forum. Mr. Griffin is a pilot and an Air Force veteran. Welcome to Senate Education. I'm going to keep you to a time limit of 5 minutes. If you could please make your opening remarks.
I sure will. Thank you so much, Senator Tolman and members of the committee, to have me here today to evaluate me for reappointment. I want to start out by saying, as always, that our kids are just as bright, our teachers are just as dedicated, our parents love their kids just as much as everywhere else. It's our public policy choices that we make that impact the outcomes for our kids the most, and I'm looking forward to being part of a collaboration to continue some progress we've made. And some reasons I have to be optimistic are some improvements we've had in early childhood literacy. As reading chair of the State Board of Education and as the chair of the Tribal Compacting Committee, early indications are beginning of year, mid-year evaluations, implementation of the Alaska Reads Act, as we have seen some significant progress in the growth in early childhood literacy, and really excited to see that part moving forward. As far as our overall trends, I'm optimistic because of the 2022 NAEP test scores. For the first time that we've actually had broadly our NAEP test scores are starting to turn around our national standings. We had one of the lowest COVID losses during that time frame. Other major accomplishments, of course, that we've had during the time frame is the AK Star adaptive testing models, the teacher certification pathways, and, of course, the tribal compacting. But I'll, again, in brevity, I'll move past those things. If you have the handout in the second section, there's this really interesting chart that has a bunch of it shows the longitudinal NAEP test score increases for fourth grade reading for low-income students. And in that, Alaska is shown in the bottom and red, and Mississippi in yellow, and Florida in green. I'm excited about our opportunities because when I at the third annual reading symposium, I understood that Alaska is actually at a faster pace. We're creating teachers that are proficient in the science of reading and our professional development than what happened in Mississippi. And if you can see that blue arrow in Mississippi, implemented their version of the Alaska Reads Act, their results shot up. And I'm really hopeful that we'll be able to do those type of things. The energy at that reading symposium was actually, it was really amazing. Though I'm optimistic about the future for especially early childhood literacy, I'm also have some concerns about that we poorly allocate our resources, and we need to find a way to refocus and getting more resources into the classrooms. The resources that we've expended over the years haven't resulted in positive outcomes, and I'm hoping we can turn that around a little bit. When I contrast the models in Florida compared to Alaska on what we've done, the Rutgers study that came out put Alaska as the second most adequately funded system in the United States, Florida as the least most adequately funded system, but yet in our the NAEP test results in that graphic that show in there, Florida quite a bit outperforms us by quite a bit. One of the recent metrics that I've been tracking too for judging quality of systems is the number of students that graduate with an AP test of 3 or higher. Florida again ranked the least adequately funded system in the United States as 3rd in the nation. 29% of their students achieving an AP test of 3 or higher, and Alaska, we lag a little bit behind at 45th in the nation with only 12% of our kids. It's also interesting to note that Miami-Dade Public Schools in Florida, their fourth grade NAEP scores were statistically indistinguishable from upper middle income white kids in Alaska, even though Florida, that Miami-Dade Public Schools, 94% ethnic minorities, 66% free or reduced lunch, and over half the kids in Miami-Dade Public Schools speak something other than English at home. One of my other big concerns is the large escalation in building costs and how that robs resources from classroom operations. Recently had a budget that came up before the state board that I voted against because we've seen a huge escalation way above the rate of inflation in building costs. And again, that we have billions of dollars in deferred maintenance. And in one case, we had a facility for 170 students that was listed at $102 million, which for context, the Denina Center was $111 million itself. The next one is our poor support for our very successful charter schools. As we've seen before, we have the best charter schools in the United States by the Harvard study. But for the National Alliance for Public Charter Schools, we're one of the most poorly supported. If you look at that graphic with the National Alliance of Public Charter Schools, we're third from the bottom for our support. And one of the key factors in that is the fact that we don't have secondary authorizers. We're only one of 5 states in the United States that puts sole authority in the hands of local districts. I'll skip ahead here to some of our challenges and opportunities. I see these all both as challenges and opportunities. Poverty is obviously a huge challenge. Kids who are in poverty or in free or reduced lunch perform less well than kids who are not. The opportunity in there is Alaska has one of the lower poverty rates in the United States and one of the lowest rates of free and reduced lunch. World languages, of course, is a big challenge. That kids who don't speak English very well are better as a challenge. Alaska, we have about 2.5 of our students that speak English less than very well, and it's a little bit below the national average of 4.5%. I think that diversity is a great strength, and the fact that our Black and Hispanic students achieve a much higher level than Black and Hispanic students do across the United States is something that we're certainly proud of. The cost of living differential between Alaska and other portions of the United States has actually been improving quite a lot. In the latest Commerce Department figures, Alaska is now the 16th most expensive state in the United States. And the fact that our rural districts continue to be some of the highest performing districts in the state, and also our lowest performing districts, but our some of our rural districts dramatically outperform our big five districts. And just to
I'm going to ask for you to wrap up your comments.
I will. And if we just wanted to review some of the graphics that were that I talked about before, that the performance of our Hispanic and Black students, the proficiency rates, and the latest AK Star for math and language arts proficiency, where we rank in the Miami-Dade Public Schools in the green on that third page down at the bottom ranks compared to kids who don't qualify for free or reduced lunch in the United States, and then those bar charts for students who speak English very well or better.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Are there questions from committee members? Senator Ray Jackson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Welcome, and thank you for your willingness to always serve on the board. I happen to have a really great appreciation for mission statements, because they tell you at a glance what the role is of a board, commission, or organization. So with that said, the mission of the state board is an excellent education for every student every day. So my question is, do you feel like the state board is fulfilling this mission? Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Through the chair, Senator Gray Jackson, I think we are. We're moving that direction. Not every kid is achieving as well as we want them to, but I think if we look upon the things like the Alaska Reads Act that we adopted, and thank Senator Tobin for her role and that, it took a while to get that drug across the finish line. We first introduced that legislation, I think, back in 2014. And if we'd had that in place since 2014, we may be a little bit closer to where places like Mississippi are, where they have some of the lowest achievement gaps in the United States. Where if you look at those bar charts that I provide, that Mississippi is actually second in the nation in low income fourth grade reading and NAEP test scores.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Grimm, I just want to ask, as you've mentioned now NAEP scores a few times, and we have some pretty abysmal assessment data from certain populations within our public schools, and I haven't seen those numbers improve during your 5 years on the state board. So can you tell us your thoughts on statewide assessment and why we shouldn't be encouraging all students to take state assessments?
Through the chair, Senator Tobin, I think we should be encouraging all students to take. As a guy who likes to measure things, I like to see everyone being measured. When we have large statistical samples, that's also helpful as well. I wouldn't disagree with that sentiment at all.
Thank you. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Griffin, thanks for being here. And looking at your resume, let me thank you for your career with the United States Armed Services. Really appreciate your service. Wanted to ask you. You talked about the cost of our school buildings, the major maintenance backlog. Can you talk to us in your 6 years on the board? What proposals have you and the board brought forward to adjust those standards or the things that would move the needle on the cost of school buildings?
Well, actually, this is a conversation that we've been having for a while, as we've seen this escalation in school building costs that have been coming before the board, and we've always forwarded those, and the discussion is becoming a lot more robust, and we're in the process of putting out a board resolution or memorandum encouraging us to launch some sort of commission in order to, kind of get to the bottom of where we can refocus our resources so they end up in classroom operations. When we parse out the kids who are in correspondence programs and what we spend on K-12 education, it comes a little bit north of $22,000 per student we're spending on kids in neighborhood schools. And for a cohort of 25 kids, it's about $550,000. And we just, I'm not seeing a large portion of that $550,000 ending up in the classroom with the teachers and those 25 kids. And it's, sorry, go ahead.
Paula?
Thank you. So, I appreciate the newfound attention to it. That has potential. I'm a little concerned at the average number. I mean, I don't know if Mark Twain, it's sometimes attributed to him. There are lies. There's not worse kind of lies than statistics. We'll keep that word off the minutes. I wonder, could you talk to us about your understanding of what's the average cost per student who does not have an IEP?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, I don't.
Thanks. One more.
Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Griffin, looking at the resume, I did miss one thing that I think appears elsewhere on the internet, and that is your work with, I think it's the Alaska Policy Forum. You're listed as an education research. I'll get the title wrong. Can you talk to us about the nature of that work?
Absolutely. Through the chair, Senator Keel, I've been a volunteer for the Alaska Policy Forum since its inception of, I think, about 2009-ish, and have done a lot of volunteer work over the years. My ability to travel has sent me to education conferences all over the United States and a variety of different things, the Foundation for Excellence in Education. Next one's coming up in November. You guys can all get scholarships to go. The National Alliance of Public Charter Schools, that I'm able to travel at my own expense and own pleasure to try and understand what are the things that are successful in other places in the world, and how benchmarking our performance and the way we do things against other places, how we could improve student outcomes through some of the measures that have been successful other places.
Thank you, Mr. Griffin. Additional questions from committee members? Well, I do have a question, and I had someone reach out to me and share with the meeting minutes of the family partnership where you attended as a representative of DEED. That is in the meeting minutes from this October 10th, 2022. And I'm just curious, because I haven't necessarily seen you being authorized as a spokesperson for the Department of Education and Early Development. So in those meeting minutes where they say that you're there representing the department and speaking for the department on private school funding, using public dollars for private school funding, I'm curious if you can expound on why you attended that meeting and what exactly were you speaking about in misusing public funds for private use?
Through the chair, Senator Tobin, I don't remember saying that I was representing the DEED. I'm pretty careful about one in those situations that I'm representing my own opinion in those areas. And the family partnership charter school was going through a lot of turmoil with their APC, and I don't remember the exact circumstances of the things that we were talking about, but I've always been very supportive of our correspondence allotment programs. About 70% of our students are in these programs, because parents get into these programs for a variety of different reasons. You know, the easy thing to do is to stick your kid at a bus stop and pick him up 6.5 hours later.
I'm asking specifically about your participation in this public meeting as a representative of DEED. I understand why people attend public charter schools and why they attend public correspondence programs.
Right. And I think I was invited by an APC member to talk, but I'm pretty sure I was pretty careful about pointing out that I was voicing my own opinions on it. I go out of my way to not, and you can see it in all my writings that I've had, I go out of my way to make sure that the opinions that are stated are my personal opinions and not that of the department or the State Board of Education.
That's very curious, as those public meeting minutes say that you were there as Representative Deed multiple times. But that leads me to my next question is, I know as part of the Executive Branch Ethics Act, that you swear an oath to uphold the Constitution, including Article 7, Section 2, which talks about the appropriate use of public funds for education. And so I'm curious, in your private space, when you're going around talking to folks, are you advocating for misuse of public funds?
Through our Senator Tobin, no, I've never advocated for the misuse of public funds.
Well, it's very curious to me, as you were just talking about how you're supportive of allotments, but that was just knocked down by a Superior Court judge as being unconstitutional usages. So it's difficult for me to marry those two statements together. Are there additional questions from committee members? Senator Keel.
I can wait for Senator Gray to answer. I've had several.
Oh, Okay.
Ray Jackson.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. So given your previous opposition to increase education funding, I'm wondering, because now you've had a change of heart, and you support, at least that's my understanding, a $680 ESA increase, and I'm wondering how do you envision this affecting Alaska schools?
Through the chair.
Actually, I'm glad to see that you've had a change of heart.
Well, through,
thank you, Madam Chair.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Craig Jackson, you're right. We have had a large increase in per student spending over the between 2003 and 2023, about a 91% increase per student in state formula funding when in Alaska inflation was about 60.3%. But the more recent spending has been quite flat. There's no doubt about that. And that the current proposal of $680 per student based student allocation, I'm not opposed to that.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Senator Keel.
Excuse me. Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Griffin, you talked about the conversations going on charter schools. And you have made references a couple of times, I think, to the size of the charter school wait lists that are out. And my understanding, my office has asked the department several times for those lists, and we haven't received them. But you've talked about numbers. Can you tell us how many unique individual Alaska kids are on charter school wait lists?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, I'm not exactly how many it is that the last numbers that I've seen, there was about 800 kids on the waiting list. That we have had times where the waiting lists were a lot more. There's some speculation that some of those kids that were on waiting lists that they're now in micro schools and learning pods as the parents got tired of waiting for those lists. But I would argue that any kids on a waiting list indicates there's a market demand beyond the supply.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Keel. Any additional questions before we move to public testimony? President Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Bob. Good to see you.
Good to see you, sir.
So an issue that has confused me from the beginning is the difference between direct and indirect contributions to public and private. So could you help me understand that? What is the difference? Is there a difference?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, I guess if I have to go back to Webster's definition of direct and indirect, in the cases of the charter allotment programs, we have a lot of indirect money that goes to content providers, as does in every brick and mortar school. We buy textbooks from educational institutions. We do purchase like Sylvan Learning Centers do a lot of contract work for brick and mortar schools, and it's I really can't find a distinction between the people who find a content provider who's a private sector content provider when there's not a lot of public sector content providers for a lot of things that we use to educate our kids. I think the underlying principle is that we're getting very good outcomes from these kids from what we've seen at a very reasonable price. That if all the kids that are in correspondence allotment programs were somehow to come back into brick and mortar programs, I think it would generate or trigger another $190 million a year in formula funding because of the additional formula that they would trigger if they were in course or in neighborhood schools.
Thank you.
Senator Bjorkman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Griffin, thank you for joining us today. I apologize for being tardy as I was away on some other business. But I just wanted to clarify, did I understand right that you now are supporting a $680 increase to the BSA?
Through the chair, Senator Bjorkman, yes, I have. And I don't know if I've ever gone on the record of opposing the $680 BSA increase. We have had pretty generous funding for K-12 education over the last 20 years, but it has been flatter in the last few years, and I think that's the number most people have settled on, and I don't disagree with that.
Very good. Follow-up? Thank you for that answer. Did you lobby members of the legislature regarding the veto override vote for Senate Bill 140?
Through the chair, Senator Bjorkman, yes, I did. I encouraged members to override the veto, and that I think the governor was correct in that the package was light on reforms, and I think the proposal in House Bill 392 right now is a pretty minimal ask for essentially the same thing.
To clarify, so you urge members to do what regarding the veto?
Through the chair, Senator Bjorkman, I encourage members to not override the veto. I guess there we go. I encourage them to sustain the veto because I think the governor was correct in that we've gone down the road of increasing spending without meaningful reforms for an awful long time, and I think it's important that we mix in at least some minimal reforms like that have produced outstanding outcomes in places like Florida and Mississippi. And one of the biggest defects we have in our charter school program is the lack of secondary authorizers, that without a secondary authorizer, charter schools are subject to a very asymmetric power relationship when they're negotiating a charter contract, and we're one of only five states in the United States that leaves that asymmetric power in the hands of local school districts.
I understand. One more. Last year, you presented in front of a joint meeting of the Senate Education and House Education Committee on behalf of your role on a committee of the state school board, and you presented a lot of graphs and information. That information was marked with deed logos and other things. Had that information that you presented to the joint committee that day, had that been vetted through the school board process, or had it been adopted, and had it been given kind of a stamp of approval by the state board before you presented that information?
Through the chair, Senator Bjorkman, I have to assume so. I submitted the slides, and the slides were forwarded.
Okay. I just wanted to clarify, because you had testified earlier that about your official role and how things go. And as I talked with the chair of the board after that and raised a concern that much of the information that was presented during that hearing appeared to be your own work and of your own making to that presentation of our joint committee that day, he agreed and identified with that concern and validated it. So I have concerns when we talk about information that is shared in a public setting with a deed stamp on it, or in your position as a state school board member, that somehow those lines get blurred. So I have that continuing concern. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Bjorkman. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe a broader, sort of more philosophical question, if I may. The board in the last year or two has taken it upon itself to do some regulation writing in areas where there's legislation proposed in front of the legislature. And the general structure is that, you know, the legislature writes the laws and boards and regulatory bodies can implement them or make them specific. Can you talk to us about your philosophy of where the board's power and appropriate use of power lies, and where it's limited, when legislators, and in some cases the governor, seem to think that changes in the statute are necessary?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, if I understand the question correctly, what are the limits of what the board can do, and as far as I'm still a pretty strong believer and understand that we can only write regulations that are based upon statute. I don't see that we have any role beyond that. So.
Is it follow-up?
Follow-up, Senator Keel.
And would you say, given some of the things that the board has done by regulation in the last year or two, where legislators seem to think that changes in law are necessary, would you say that the board has limited itself in that way?
That's through the chair. Senator Keel, I would say, yes, we have.
Okay. Appreciate that take. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, thank you, Mr. Griffin, again. We do appreciate your willingness to serve on the State Board of Education for an additional term. I will say that I have deep reservations about your reappointment, and I'm sure that is no surprise to you whatsoever. I hear you talking about lobbying legislators, which I think gets very close to violating the ethics, the Executive Branch Ethics Act. I hear you talking about particular data, and I often read in your documents talking about how adequate our foundation formula is, but in my conversations with those researchers from Florida, they've been so dismayed by the misrepresentation of their data, they're choosing to exclude Alaska going forward. And it's just confusing to me how you continue to propagate what I find is to be misinformation. I see here in one of your documents to us where you're talking about how why are so many families not choosing their neighborhood schools? And you state, I'm very curious to understand why parents are voting with their feet. Well, even the teacher retention and working group tells us that teachers want a competitive salary, that they want to have defined benefits, that we have recent news reports that say that folks have been participating in correspondence programs because there's no longer arts and science and PE in their neighborhood schools. And this has happened during your 5 years on the State Board of Education. Hundreds of millions of dollars have gone out of the public funds into private hands during your tenure on the State Board of Education. There's deep reservations. I will tell you that as we continue to consider your reappointment, I will be sharing my reservations with my colleagues. And I hope that you understand we want folks who care about our public schools, who are advocating for our public schools, who are not talking about reconstituting power within the state board and away from our locally elected school board members. It is very disturbing to me that you think that the decision should be made in the State Board of Education and not at the local level with those local communities, that we should change our charter school authorizations so that we can somehow have better outcomes when, from all intents and purposes, we have the best charter schools in the nation. Why would we change that? So I have deep reservations. As we continue going through this process, I encourage you to talk with folks and reach out, but I will be telling you that I will not be voting for your reconfirmation. With that, I will open public testimony. Anyone here in the room who wishes to testify? Seeing none, we're going to move to our first online testifier. We have Ray Craig from Anchorage. Ray, if you could please identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony. You have 2 minutes.
Chair Tobin and Education Committee members, my name is Ray Craig. Bob Griffin has been a tireless and outstanding advocate for improving K-12 education in Alaska. I strongly support his confirmation for another term on the State Board of Education. The kind of need in Alaska are those recognized in the June 1st, 2023 New York Times editorial page column attached to my testimony. Quote, Mississippi is offering lessons for America on education by Nicholas Kristof. Quote, the refrain across much of the Deep South for decades was, thank God for Mississippi, end quote. That's because other southern states believe that no matter how bad their education systems were, Mississippi would always be at the bottom. Mississippi decided to take control of its educational system. In the last 10 years, all of its energy has been placed into getting all children to read at the third grade level by the end of the third grade. Results? On the NAEP test, Mississippi is soaring in national rankings. Was this accomplished by lower classroom size, social promotion? After all, Mississippi had a lot to overcome. Mississippi ranks dead last in child poverty and second highest in teen births. It was near the bottom of the NAEP test, too. Now, among low-income students, Mississippi fourth graders are tied for best in reading and ranked second in math. Bob Griffin is an expert on exactly these reforms. I've known him for 14 years. He's an Alaskan treasure and patriot. Losing his experience and wisdom would be a disaster for education progress. It must not happen. Because education is critical, this is one of the most important votes in the legislature this session, and a spotlight will be on each vote for or against Bob. We can't continue the turnout.
Mr. Craig, could you please wrap up your comments?
Sure. Adequately read or do math. This is a continuing human rights abuse. I hope the committee can consider what Mississippi has been able to do and keep Bob Griffin on the state board so we can achieve results like this in Alaska. I thank you for your careful consideration and attention.
Thank you, Mr. Craig. Moving on to David Boyle in Anchorage. Mr. Boyle, if you could please identify yourself for the record, you have 2 minutes.
Chairwoman Tobin, committee members, I'm David Boyle and testifying for myself. I strongly support the confirmation of Mr. Bob Griffin to the State Board of Education. As a fellow veteran, I have known Bob Griffin for nearly 20 years, and he is a man of integrity. He's a top-notch researcher in K-12 education and has always kept the interest of all children as his first priority. If you want to know more about K-12 education, ask Mr. Griffin. He will overwhelm you with data, not opinions and not anecdotes. I actually call him Data Man. Mr. Griffin has proved a strong ally on the State Board of Education and has enabled the board to make decisions that focus on what's best for all Alaska students. He's provided research and data on the performance of Alaska's K-12 system compared to all the other state systems. Mr. Griffin took the lead in forming a team to improve our reading proficiency. As a result of his research in the science of reading, we now have the Alaska Reads Act, which he coordinated closely with former Senator Tom Begich. This statewide effort will improve our students' reading abilities to include comprehension. The act also requires accountability from teachers, parents, and students. They're all in. In a few years, we're all going to look back and thank Mr. Griffin for the Alaska Reads Act. I know that some have attacked Mr. Griffin as an opponent of public education. That could not be further from the truth. Bob brings data, facts, and lots of charts to the discussions on K-12 education. His only objective is to improve K-12 education for all Alaska children. He's identified wasteful spending, which takes away from the classroom where the learning really occurs. Mr. Griffin brings another viewpoint to the table through his research, and you all know that we need data, facts, and good research to determine the best policies. Thank you for this opportunity, and I respectfully request you confirm Mr. Griffin.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Boyle. Moving on, staying in Anchorage, we have Carolyn Storm, the Executive Director of the Coalition for Education Equity. Ms. Storm, if you could please identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony when you are ready. Ms. Storm, can you hear us?
Hello?
Hello. If you could please identify yourself for the record, you have 2 minutes. Or not. We'll come back. Moving on to Laura Bonner. Laura, if you could please identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony, you have 2 minutes.
Good afternoon. My name is Laura Bonner, and I live in Anchorage. And I oppose the reappointment of Bob Griffin. The State Board of Education has failed to steer deed to make measurable improvements or provide adequate oversight for districts. One glaring example of that is the failure of oversight and fiscal responsibility to maintain equity requirements to comply with the Alaska Rescue or American Rescue Plan funds paid to the state in 2022 and 2023. The affected districts could really use the funds to do them. Another major concern is his SMA that was submitted to the legislators in the House hearing. I had no mention that he is a senior education research fellow and a member of the board of directors for Alaska Policy Forum, a private organization that has pushed for decades for vouchers or other means to use public education money for private and religious schools. Mr. Griffin wrote for the Alaska Policy Forum on June 29, 2014, Alaska's public schools are not underfunded. They are not run efficiently because they are a monopoly. In February of this year, he wrote that Alaska schools do not need an increase in funding. Alaska does not have a K-12 funding program. we have a resource allocation program. The second statement was from a different article. He claims he supports, in the House committee hearing, he claimed he supports local control of charter schools, but by local elected school boards.
Ms. Bonner, if you could please wrap up your comments.
But he supports the board authorization for schools. Mr. Griffin has a right to his opinions, but there's...
Ms. Bonner, if you could please wrap up your comments. You're at your 2 minutes.
...are counter to the Constitution mandate to maintain a system of public schools open to all children.
Thank you, Ms. Bonner. If you would like to submit your written comments, you can at senate.education@akleg.gov. We'll now return back to Carolyn Storm. Carolyn, if you can hear us, if you could please identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony when you are ready.
Hello, can you hear me now?
We can.
All right, thank you. Sorry, I'm in a remote location, so I might drop off yet again. My name is Caroline Storm. I'm the Executive Director for the Coalition for Education Equity. I want to thank the Senate Education Committee for taking public testimony. I want to also echo the chairwoman's comments earlier about reservations about Mr. Griffin's reconfirmation. While on the board of the Alaska Policy Forum, Mr. Griffin has continually advocated for vouchers, and that is against and counter to our Constitution. Mr. Griffin continues to cite the Rutgers study, which has subsequently, the authors of that study has subsequently said that they will exclude Alaska in going forward because the data is inaccurate. I was listening to Mr. Griffin's comments, and I'm a little perplexed by him saying that the cost of building is too high and that we shouldn't be adequately building public schools for our kids, when as an architect, which I was in my previous career, I can tell you that the cost of remote construction in Alaska is just absurdly high, and there is no way that we can get around that. We have a mandate under Molly Hooch to provide public education facilities in every village across Alaska, and we should be supporting that in every manner possible. There's this constant push for correspondence schools, and I just want to cite or quote a current superintendent when I asked them what was one takeaway from COVID, and they said, kids really need to be in classrooms with their peers. Again, I oppose Mr. Griffin's reappointment. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Storm. Seeing as there's no other testifiers online, anyone else in the room who'd like to testify? I'm now going to close public testimony. Any final comments from committee members? All right. Mr. Senate President, may I have a motion?
The Senate Education Committee has reviewed the qualifications of the governor's appointee to the Board of Education and Early Development and recommends the following name be forwarded to a joint session for consideration, Bob Griffin. This does not reflect the intent of any of the members of the Senate Education Committee to vote for or against this individual during any further sessions for the purpose of confirmation.
Thank you. The name Bob Griffin will be forwarded to a joint session of the Alaska Legislature. We are going to keep on rolling as we are running out of time, and we have quite a few folks who've signed up for public testimony for the next bill. Thank you again, and good luck.
Thank you.
Our next item of business is the first hearing for Senate Bill 266, which is an act relating to correspondence study programs. This bill is sponsored by the Senate Education Committee. My Senate Education Committee aide, Mike Mason, is here to walk us through a sectional analysis, but prior to that, I just want to give folks a little bit of a grounding of why this bill has come forth. Just a few weeks ago, there was a decision that was handed down from the Alaska Superior Court that indicated that two sections of state law relating to public correspondence programs, specifically individual education plans and also allotments were unconstitutional, as the Alaska legislature does not want to take the risk of not having these programs available for our correspondents' families. We worked quickly to draft Senate Bill 266, which is the bill that you will see before you. There are a few key components for Senate Bill 266 that I just want to highlight before Mr. Mason goes through a sectional analysis. The first is that Senate Bill 266 reinstates statewide assessments for all public school students. Parents will still receive a two-week notification of assessment dates, and students who are participating in a religious holiday on a testing date as defined by their parent will still be able to opt out of participation. Accommodations for students covered by the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act are unaffected by this reinstatement. Now, the reason we included this provision is that in 2016, House Bill 146, which became law in 2016, permitted parents to opt out of all statewide assessments. This is in direct violation of a 2007 Superior Court decision by then Superior Court Judge Gleason that ruled that the state must have an adequate method of assessing whether children are actually learning what is set out in state standards. Without having the ability to adequately assess whether children are learning what is set out in state standards, the state is unable to provide the required accountability and oversight of all public school systems. Additionally, Senate Bill 266 reinstates the 2008 DEED Correspondence Study Program regulatory package into state law. This 2008 regulatory package was propagated under the Palin administration and we believe is the best example of a correspondence program that falls in line with our Constitution. Within the 2008 regulatory package, DEED or a local school district can provide a correspondence study program. They can also provide a student fund account, which has been renamed allotment. But in this particular legislation, we return that name to student fund account. And this is for the purpose of providing individualized academic instruction. The State Board of Education is required to promulgate regulation pertaining to student fund account expenditures, and they must comply with the prohibitions listed in SB 266, which include purchasing partisan, sectarian, or denominational materials. Additionally, DEED or a local school district must return unexpended student fund accounts at the end of each year and report on all these expenditures annually. This is the same stipulation that is existing for our public brick and mortar schools. Additionally, SB 266 strengthens existing reporting requirements for correspondence programs and requires DEED to annually report to the legislature student demographic information, expenditures from student fund accounts, and performance on statewide assessments and administrative costs associated with correspondence programs, with the hope that we do not end up in the same situation again. If there's no questions from committee members, Mr. Mason will walk through a sectional analysis of the bill.
Good afternoon. My name is Mike Mason. I am staff to Senator Lukey Gale Tobin. As Senator Tobin noted, in the wake of the Superior Court ruling striking down two key statutes regarding correspondence school programs in Alaska, the Senate Education Committee has put forward Senate Bill 266. The goal is to provide clear guidance and guardrails for Alaska's public correspondence programs. So beginning with Section 1, this section amends AS 1403-016 by repealing the blanket withdrawal provisions for statewide assessments for students in K-12. The ability for parents to opt out of education assessments was signed into law in 2016 in the form of House Bill 156, as noted by Senator Tobin. The statutory requirement for at least two-week notification of statewide assessments remains unchanged, and parents may still withdraw their public school participating child from statewide assessments when the testing dates fall on religious holidays, and then accommodations for students covered by the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, also who have a 504 or transition impairment plan or are identified as English learners, are not affected by this repeal. Moving on to Section 2, it adds a new subsection to AS 1403-300 requiring the Alaska Department of Education or a local school district to report annually on the students' participation in their correspondence study programs. The report must include the demographic information, expenditures made by a student fund account, and then appropriately aggregated performance on a statewide assessment and administrative cost associated with the operation of the correspondence study program. Moving on to Section 3, it repeals and then reenacts AS 1403-310 and reinstates components of the 2008 Correspondence Study Program regulatory package that was promulgated by the Alaska Department of Education and Early Development. Under the new ASO 1403310, the department or local school district can provide a correspondence study program enrollee a fund account to meet the purpose of providing individual academic instruction. AS 1403310 directs the State Board of Education and Early Development to adopt regulations pertaining to the student fund account expenditures and outlines the stipulations for the regulations. Noted, the regulations must comply with AS 1403090, which prohibits educators or schools from advocating for partisan, sectarian, or denominational doctrines, and also AS 14.18.060, which prohibits the selection of textbooks and instructional materials that are biased towards one sex. Regulations put forward under this section must also meet additional requirements outlined under the new sections E through G of AS 1403310. The new AS 1403310 also directs the department or local public school district to return the unexpended student fund balance to the budget of the department or district, including any funds that remain when a student disenrolls from a correspondence program. Section 4 amends AS 1407168 to include information collected under the new subsections that are established under AS 1403300 in the annual report that is submitted to the State Board of Education and by the State Board of Education to the Alaska State Legislature. Section 5 amends AS 14.07.158, Section 23, Chapter 40, SLA 2022. That's the Alaska Reads Act. To include the annual report provided to the Alaska Legislature by the Alaska Board of Education and Early Development that includes the information established under the new subsections established under the new AS 1403300. Sections 4 and 5 relate to the 2034 repeal of the Alaska Reads Act, ensuring continued reporting of the information collected under AS 1403300. Essentially, this section is put into both sections of the bill, the section that is in place prior to the repeal in 2034 and the section that would be in place after the repeal in 2034. That can be a little confusing under several bills that I've had to deal with. So that's the Alaska Reads Act. It's in there in two sections, prior to the repeal and after the repeal. Section 6 basically repeals AS 1403300, subsection B. And if you look at the statute, subsection B is the portion of the statute that says, notwithstanding another provision of law, the department may not impose additional requirements other than the requirements specified under A of this section and under AS 1403310 on a student who is proficient or advanced on statewide assessments required under AS 1403123F. Essentially, by removing that subsection, it removes the stipulation that you could not put essentially sideboards or reporting requirements on the student allotments. And with that, I will try to answer any questions, though I might have to punt to Senator Tobin, who's way more versed on this than I am.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mason. For those also who are interested, we do have a few folks who are available for questions. We have Legislative Council, we have the Legislative Legal Services Division, the lawyer who drafted the bill, Ms. Bergerud. Oh, goodness, I know I'm butchering that. We also have the Program Director for Raven Homeschool here in person, Kimberly Berge, I believe. Yes. And we also have the superintendent of Craig City School District, Chris Raytan, who is very familiar with public correspondence programs. And we also have Deb Riddle, the operations manager for the D Division of Innovation and Education Excellence, to provide an analysis of the fiscal note. And any questions before we move to the fiscal note?
Senator, just a note. I'm not sure if Chris has made it online yet. He was having some location troubles being in a spot where he could call in.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mason. Any questions before we move to the fiscal note? With that being said, Ms. Riddle, if you would come walk us through the $6,000.
Hi, thank you. My name is Deborah Riddle, and I am the Division Operations Manager for the Division of Innovation and Education Excellence at the Department of Education and Early Development. The fiscal note for this bill, for HB 266, is the OMB component number 2796, and it is for $6,000 to cover the cost of working with the Department of Law and Regulation Development.
Any questions from committee members? Seeing none, thank you very much for walking us through them. Very short and brief fiscal note. Are there any additional questions before we open up public testimony or any comments? Senator Keel.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe just a couple of questions. I know we have a lot of people who want to testify about sort of some of the sideboards here. And I'll set a little context. When my wife and I were homeschooling one of our children, the program helped us to purchase, with part of the price of purchasing a computer that she used to do her schoolwork. And I notice there is a partial or maybe a mostly prohibition on things purchased with the homeschool support being personal property. But let me ask. Could my daughter, under these rules, have kept that computer, I think she used it for 6 years, that was partially purchased with those dollars?
Senator Keel, for clarity, keep it in perpetuity or keep it for the full 6 years?
I think she kept it. I think she still had it when she graduated high school, so kept it in perpetuity. I notice there's a prohibition. I can't point exactly the line in the bill. You can't attach anything to your home. You can't keep the textbooks forever. What about something like a computer for doing schoolwork?
Senator Keel, from our understanding, what districts have done and what I believe the regulatory package that could potentially be repropagated by the State Board of Education would be to do a depreciation. And so that over a period of time for some of these materials, the school district would depreciate those. And if you wanted to purchase it at the end of that 6 years for a depreciated value, you would have the opportunity to do so.
Okay.
But that is in regulation at current.
Thank you. That's helpful. And then a little bit about sort of the bounds on purchasing things like curriculum. The question of what is an educational institution, I think, will be at the heart of the committee's consideration. McGraw-Hill is a textbook publisher. Presumably, they would not be considered an educational institution, Mr. Mason?
Through the chair, Mike Mason, staff to Senator Tobin, I might have the department weigh in on this, but it is my understanding that textbooks would be an authorized expense, but the textbook would have to be approved by the correspondence program. So, if McGraw-Hill was producing the textbooks that were approved by the correspondence program, that would be an allowed expense under this Senate Bill 266.
And Senator Keel, I would refer you back to page 3, lines 3 through 13, which directs the state board to adopt regulations requiring the department and district to provide the correspondence study program to approve expenditures and what those regulations must include, which is what would be identified under regulation. So would those particular institutions be pre-approved? Would they need to have authorization before the purchase? And I think there's some set requirements on what those materials must look like. They must be appropriate for the student. They must comply with state standards. They must comply with those particular provisions in state law that say we should not have a sex bias on any of our textbooks. They ensure that they are not denominational, sectarian, or religious in nature. Additionally, there is a provision if you look forward all the way down to, I'm going to see if I can make sure I find this particular section, which is on page 4, lines 22 and 20, or excuse me, on lines 24 and 25, that there may be some flexibility from the school administrator to approve explicit expenditures if they meet the needs of the student's individual learning plan.
Thank you. If I may?
Yes.
That was a lot for yes, you can buy a textbook. The other question, though, and I notice that there are some prohibitions on things like buying clothing and PE equipment. So while the allotment could be used for the the share of the computer. It couldn't buy the bicycle for PE. The other question that I've received a lot of emails about are things like a PE class or instruction that would be used to satisfy a physical ed requirement. And so the question to the sponsor of the staff would be, can you tell us about what those strictures would be on something like a dance class or a ski lesson?
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Keel. I will reference you back to page 4, lines 26 through page 5, line 2, which provides some insight. We did choose to take the 2008 regulation versus the 2005. The 2008 was more permissive, where it allows students who use a student fund account to contract with private individuals to provide tutoring in fine arts, music, and physical education as a part of their learning plan. There is additional stipulations that you must have a certificated teacher who is employed by the correspondence program and who's qualified to teach in grades or qualified to teach in subjects that are not those particular ones, as those would not be private individuals. So if you were getting an advanced math class in private tutoring, or if you were going to geophysics learning, you would need a certified teacher for those particular things. But within the fine arts, music, and physical education, you can have a private individual provide those services to you.
Thank you.
Any additional questions? Let's open it up for public testimony. I am going to attempt to go in order of the order of who signed up here first, so we can get the first folks who've been waiting the longest. I do want to let folks know that we do have over 50 folks online to provide public testimony. We are limiting it to 2 minutes. If we are unable to get through the list today, we will pick this back up on Wednesday and keep public testimony open until Wednesday. If you would like to submit public testimony via written testimony, if you'd like to submit written testimony, you can email that to senate.education@akled.gov. And with that, I will open public testimony. First up, we have Larae Smith out of Houston, Texas. Ms. Smith, if you can hear me, if you could please identify yourself for the record. You have 2 minutes.
Yes, Houston, Alaska, not Houston, Texas. I am an IDEA graduate. I graduated from IDEA in 2009, and my mom homeschooled all 7 of us kids through it, and I absolutely love the correspondence organization as it's set up. I'm also a private teacher. I teach music lessons full-time, and I'm a single mom, and it's a beautiful thing that I absolutely love to do. There are some things that I'm concerned about in this bill, not just for my business, but also for all of my friends who are homeschool families trying to figure this out. The bill appears to be very limiting, and I wish that I was an attorney and I could understand the wording a lot better. It does say in that section that you were talking about using music, providing allotment for fine arts and music and education is allowed through the ILP. There is something in the end, though, that concerns me. It seems vague. It says tutoring paid for under this subsection may not be provided by a private or religious educational institution. I am not sure what an institution is. It might be a school, but I'm not sure, and it seems a little bit limiting. There's also another one that also concerned me in Section 3B, subsection B. It said a student fund account may not be used by the district or the parent or guardian of a student enrolled in the correspondence study program to supplant district funds or obligations for individual education program services. I would love some clarification on that. It sounds as if something like music lessons would not be allowed through that. I have so many friends who have kids in public school, and their kids have this opportunity to have specialized teachers to educate them. And also, this bill does not allow for payment of things like field trips and memberships to the zoo.
Ms. Smith, if you could please wrap up your comments.
Yes, ma'am. And so I believe that is not fair for public school children to be able to have that, but homeschool children should not have these opportunities. Thank you.
Thank you. And just so folks know, the language on supplanting is that you cannot use district funds to supplant an IEP or an individual education plan that's required under federal Individuals with Disabilities an education act. So you cannot use those funds to supply or to supplant federally obligated dollars for that student. Moving on to Crumley, Maureen Crumley, if you could please identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony. You have 2 minutes.
Yes, thank you. My name is Maureen Crumley. I'm an Anchorage resident. Thank you for the opportunity to give public testimony. I would like to stress parents should have the opportunity to provide the best education possible for their children, to include but not limited to parents' ability to use funding for tutors in core education in all subjects, including math, reading, and the sciences. Parents should also be able to use the funding available to them to include equipment for physical education. And parents should also have the ability to use the funding available to them for their choice in tutors, and including religious and private educational institutions. We find that within our area, we have excellent opportunities for that, and it should be available to all children and at parents' choice. It appears the changes being presented in Senate Bill 266 are in effect and an effort to crush the current correspondence school programs, and these changes will affect over 22,000 students. I would like to end my testimony by stressing parents have the obligation to educate their children. Senate Bill 266 hinders and reduces the opportunity our Alaska parents have to provide the best education possible for their children. Thank you.
Thank you. Moving on to Wasilla, we have Amanda Wraith. Amanda, if you could please identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony. You have 2 minutes.
Hello. Thank you. Can you hear me?
We can.
Okay. Thank you so much, Chairwoman Tobin and Vice Chairman Stevens and all of the members of the committee. I appreciate you opening it up for public testimony today. My name is Amanda Wraith. I am speaking today for myself and my family as an educator, a parent, a business owner. But more than that, I'm speaking as an Alaskan who wants to see all Alaskan children educated in the way that best meets their diverse and unique learning needs and that develops their individual gifts. And I believe that's what each of you desire as well. I am extremely tired. I arrived at 2 a.m. this morning from returning from Pittsburgh with our IDEA Academic Decathlon team who represented Alaska tremendously at the United States Academic Decathlon National Competition. And these are some of the kinds of opportunities that IDEA has given our students. The weekend before, I was in Orlando with one of our IDEA students who competed in the USA Brain Bee National Neuroscience Competition as the winner of Alaska's Brain Bee. And I love these young people and their families and seeing the kinds of doors that are open to them. But I want every Alaska student to have these kind of diverse opportunities and to have equity in the funding that is available to them as public school students. Well, sadly, I come to you today exhausted, not celebrating with my students, but trying to see what's going on with this Senate Bill 266, which threatens harm to our students and is a dangerous threat to parents' rights.
Ms. Wraith, if you could please wrap up your comments.
Yep. It limits educational opportunities for our kids. And all of this needs to be equitable. So however public funding is allowed.
Ms. Wraith, if you could please wrap up your comments.
In public schools should be the same in correspondence funding. Thank you.
Thank you. Moving to Anchorage, we have Stacy Lang. Ms. Lang, if you could please identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony. You have 2 minutes.
Hi, my name is Stacy Lang. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. I'm a mother of a child who is homeschooled and attends a private school in Anchorage. I'm calling to strongly oppose Senate Bill 266 because it violates my fundamental right as a parent to direct the upbringing and education of my child. School choice is important because it puts money into the hands of parents to educate their children. Parents know better than bureaucrats what educational setting is best for their children. I would say that this is of particular importance considering the poor educational outcomes of the Anchorage School District. Last year, the proficiency test scores for reading and math were a dismal 34 and 27%. In addition, in 2022, the National Assessment of Education Progress published findings that only 11.9% of Alaska high school graduates passed at least one AP test with a 3 or higher. To put it another way, Alaska ranked 45th in the nation. Poor educational outcomes coupled with indoctrination of critical race theory and gender ideology are behind the mass exodus of families leaving public schools nationwide, including the Anchorage School District. Both Senate Bill 266 and the Teachers Union's rewrite of the Correspondence School of Regulation, which are notably very similar, are a blatant attempt to force families back to public education, but it's also a violation of the United States Constitution. In 1925, the case of Pierce versus Society Sisters, the United States Supreme Court ruled that parents have a fundamental right to direct the upbringing and education of their children. In 2020, in the case of Espinoza versus the Montana Department of Revenue, and in 2022, in the case of Carson versus McCon, the United States Supreme Court made clear that opponents of school choice cannot argue that state blame amendments invalidated school choice programs because they allowed parents to choose religious schools. The United States Supreme Court ruled that if you have a school choice program, you can't exclude families who choose religious schools, and you can't exclude schools just because they are religious. If you do that, violates the free exercise clause of the First Amendment of the United States Constitution. I would submit that Senate Bill 266.
Ms. Lang, if you could please wrap up your comments.
Absolutely. I would submit that this bill clearly violates the free exercise clause of the First Amendment of the United States and would ask that you would reject it. Thank you.
Thank you. Moving to Palmer, we have Catherine Gardner. Catherine, if you could please identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony. You have 2 minutes.
Good afternoon, Chair Tobin and members of the Senate Education Committee. For the record, my name is Catherine Gardner. I'm the Deputy Superintendent of Business and Operations for the Mat-Su Borough School District. I'm speaking today simply to thank the committee for so swiftly starting a process in review of correspondence study programs and allotments. In the Mat-Su School District, 16% of our student population accesses one of our 3 correspondence programs. In fact, Mat-Su Central School, our core area correspondence school, is the largest school in our district out of approximately 2,700 students, and we will be moving into a new permanent facility in support of this program in the coming year. I am calling to express our continued support for these students and their families and express appreciation for the Senate Education Committee for ensuring that our correspondence families have the support they need to continue to access this important educational option. The Mat-Su School Board will be reviewing the currently proposed legislation and will provide more specific feedback in the future. However, on behalf of the district, thank you again for setting aside time and energy for this important topic so late in the legislative session. Thanks for your service and for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. We are now going to move to the Fairbanks LIO. We have our first testifier, Starla Hallbrook. Ms. Hallbrook, if you could please identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony. You have 2 minutes.
Hello, my name is Starla Hallbrook. I'm calling in from Fairbanks, Alaska. Thank you for your time this afternoon. Also for prioritizing the issues concerning our correspondence funds and laws. I've been an Alaska resident for 5 years. I homeschool our 3 children, which are in 5th, 3rd, and kindergarten. I've graduated as a homeschool student out of Indiana and attended at Western Kentucky University. I have lots of experience with homeschool families in the lower 48 since that's where I grew up. So I know firsthand how blessed we are to be in Alaska with this very generous common sense law concerning homeschooling and the funds with which to do so. So I applaud you all for continuing and upholding our allotment, but I do oppose Senate Bill 266 based on some of the new regulations concerning homeschooling and our freedom to do so. With our allotment, we have been blessed to do things with our children that I was not able to do growing up. Recreation in Alaska enhances their health, their education, their childhood. My family would not have the funds to do that and include that in our PE without the allotment. My children also experience things outside of Fairbanks, also outside of Alaska, because of the allotment, and this opens their eyes up to so much more learning, hands-on learning. Our funds enhance the children's lives, but also the vendors and
citizens of Alaska, and I would hate to see a lot of changes made to the allotment for that purpose. So thank you for securing the allotment, but I know a lot of families that would petition against the removal of rolling over unused dollars. A lot of families have planned to use that for higher level education. So as their students are aging, they are going to use those dollars to support their high school students. So the bill does not seem to support having enough.
Thank you, Ms. Holbrook. You've hit your 2 minutes. If you could please wrap up your testimony.
Yes, absolutely. I would propose that we provide more funding at the higher level so that our high school students can have resources that are necessary for graduating high school. In addition to the mandatory testing, I appeal that the Senate allows that to be optional as it has been. We have advisory teachers.
Thank you so much, Ms. Holbrook. Staying in Fairbanks LIO, we will go to Joel Holbrook. Mr. Holbrook, if you could please identify yourself for the record. You have 2 minutes.
Hi, I'm Joel Holbrook. I'm in fifth grade. Thank you for letting me speak today. The allotment has been helping our schooling because it's fun and it helps us have our school fun and beneficial. Like, the allotment can help us buy Legos so we can easily and eagerly learn robotics and some science. We can use it to buy canvases and art supplies for our art and writing. We enjoy doing the idea clubs that we can use the allotment to pay the small fee with. We can use it to learn history, geology, and biology in museums and zoos. Thank you for letting me speak.
Thank you. Staying in the Fairbanks LIO, we have Sarah Grover. Sarah, if you could please identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony. You have 2 minutes.
Hi, my name is Sarah Grover, and I'm in Fairbanks also with the IDEA program. I also feel like it's important to keep the funding the way that the funding is, and to allow more funding for high school age students so that they can access more education. It's important to be able to use tutors and some private education to further education that parents aren't necessarily well versed in. Thank you very much for taking our testimony, and thank you for supporting this program as it stands.
Thank you. Thank you, Mrs. Grover. Moving here to in Juneau, we have Erica Beery. Erica Beery, if you could please join us here at the dais. You have 2 minutes.
Thank you. So I'm a parent of three students. Oh, I'm Erica Beery. I'm a parent of three students enrolled in IDEA. And we've been homeschooling for 9 years now. And I oppose Senate Bill 266. So the allotments aren't a blank check to families. We have to submit receipts for reimbursements, and there are multiple strict checks for these. They make sure it fits the child's ILP and if it's an allowed submission. Religious materials and courses were never allowed to be paid for with this allotment. And SB 266 is said to provide guardrails for the correspondence schools, but it's more like a vice designed to squeeze children into neighborhood schools. It's trying to remove our right to opt out of the standardized tests. And so last year's test results, they only were received last month. So how is that even beneficial to anybody? This bill is promoting funds being used to purchase materials and curriculum from private institutions, but where do the neighborhood schools get their materials and curriculums? It's from private institutions. And this bill restricts allotment being used for PE, even though childhood obesity and diabetes is on the rise. So I would think that would be something we would want to encourage more PE rather than trying to restrict it. And this bill does not allow allotment use for parents to accompany their students to stuff like museums and a neighborhood school field trip wouldn't require the teacher to pay their own way to a museum. So I don't think that that should be required of the parents to.
You could please wrap up your comments.
Sure. So ask yourselves who this benefits, and because I don't think this bill benefits the children. Thank you.
Staying here in the room, we have Howard Beery. If you could please identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony when you are ready.
Good afternoon. Yeah, Howard Beery. And the whole point of this lawsuit was because there was a correspondent school, I don't know if anybody's aware, that was using the funds for a religious school. And that was only one correspondent school. And so this bill makes it sound like all the correspondence schools are doing that, which isn't true. So just because one person does something wrong doesn't mean you should outlaw the whole system. And also with the rollover, what if you want to save to maybe get a pilot's license? That is very expensive. And how else would you be able to save if that's what your child was choosing to do is a trade, which is a huge deficit here in Alaska, not having trades. And that would just be one example. I also have a question for everybody or who's involved with this bill. Did the NEA help write this bill? And also, you should be serving the students and not the NEA. And that's all I have today.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Staying here in the room, we have Long Garrison with the Alaska Association, with the Association of Alaska School Boards. Mr. Garrison, if you could please identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony when you are ready.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the Senate Education Committee. My name is Lon Garrison. I'm the Executive Director of the Association of Alaska School Boards. I wanted to take the opportunity to testify on Senate Bill 266 and offer our support for the bill as a starting point for a conversation around the fact that we have a constitutional obligation that's been brought forward by a Superior Court judge that says we have, in the current law, a violation of the state constitution. So this bill will simply bring us back to a point where we can assure that the correspondence programs within the state have the opportunity to continue to move forward. They will be slightly different than they are currently, have been currently administered. ASB also wants to make sure that you know that we are extremely supportive of correspondence schools in the state of Alaska. Correspondence schools have been a part of the Alaska education framework for nearly 85 years, starting in 1936. So they have a long history, and they have an appropriate place in the state of Alaska, given our broad geographical distances and locales, and the fact that Alaskan students need a variety of options, of public school options, in order to meet their needs. So we look forward to continuing to work on this bill as a starting point to supporting public education options like correspondence schools. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. I just want to give folks a time check. We're at 4:53 p.m. It is my intent to get through all the testifiers here in Juneau and try to get a few more online. I know there's many folks who are waiting to testify. Unfortunately, as we are going to hit 5 o'clock here, we will not be able to get to everyone online. We will keep public testimony open till Wednesday, and at that time, we will make sure that we have this list, and we will try to prioritize those who are currently waiting so that they have the opportunity to provide their testimony on Wednesday. With that, we are going to stay here in Juneau with Emily Fernie. Ferry. There's an N in it. Emily, if you could please join us here at the dais, and identify yourself when you are ready. You have 2 minutes.
Good afternoon. My name is Emily Ferry. I am a parent of 3 kids here in Juneau, and I have a bonus child with me today. You're going to hear a lot from us mama bears today. We look out for our kids pretty fiercely. I am here in part to offer support for SB 266. I agree that homeschool families should have support and certainty, as should our neighborhood schools, our charter schools, as well as our teachers and principals, and that resolving the issues brought forward by the Superior Court decision quickly will bring about that certainty and also allow us get back to the issues that are facing the majority of our students, which is the huge underfunding and lack of investment in our education system. So I'd really like us to resolve this and move forward. I also want to say that religious education is important to my family. Skiing is important to my family. Those are things that I pay for, and it doesn't seem unreasonable that we would treat homeschool families equitably in that way as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. We have a Madeline.
Yes, for the record, my name is Madeline Branch. I am her bonus child. I would like to say that currently I am also in a homeschool program. I do go to school, but I am attempting to get ahead in my classes. This year, at the end, I'll be finishing algebra, and I am attempting to do geometry over the summer. And, I would really appreciate it if that could, stay how it is, because without that, many people, I'm just one of them, would not be able to get ahead in their classes. They also, if they're failing their classes, don't have the chance to succeed on their own with extra effort like that. And, I don't even have a computer. The only device I have is, a phone 8, and it's not, very good, and it's not very helpful when I'm trying to do my classes, and it, dies really quickly. It's a used phone, and I can, I can barely do anything on it, and this, my mom is, really hard-pressed for money. It's, our whole family situation. She doesn't even have enough to buy, extra groceries for now. And, if she has to buy a computer for me, we're, it's going to be really hard for us. And I believe that this bill will prevent us from, having a proper education. My sister attempted suicide, and then she had to skip out almost a year of school. And now she is, she's just, getting back. And, she is, I don't believe she's doing homeschool, but if she ever needs to, our family can't help with that, and this bill would prevent us from our own education. So I would like to oppose House Bill 266.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. We're staying here in Juneau, and we have Kimberly Berge, the program director for Raven Homeschool. Kimberly, if you could identify yourself for the record, you have 2 minutes.
Thank you, Chair Tobin and members of the committee. My name is Kimberly Berge for the record, and I currently serve as the principal and director for Raven Homeschool statewide. I am based in the Wasilla office out of Palmer, Wasilla area, but I do supervise all regions. I think it's really important to note, if you've not seen a map of the state of Alaska, put freckles all over it, because that's where our families are when you look at how spread out they are. So I would encourage the committee to take a very close look at the language in this bill to make sure that you're not inadvertently creating disparity in equity issues between urban and rural. Because there's a great stipulation in here in regards to PE equipment. There's a stipulation in here in regards to access to physical education facilities, whether it's Alaska Club or whatever, take your pick of what's in the community. Most of our rural communities do not have those services available. Therefore, their only option is to purchase PE equipment so that they can provide that service to their child. And so we've got to be mindful of the language in here to make sure that it covers all aspects of our state, not just those urban areas that people most commonly think of. In addition to that, I think there's some vocabulary in here that could be clarified to bring everybody to an even keel as far as interpreting what they read. Just as an example, in here you use the term education institution. The state has historically purchased things from North Dakota, from Calvert Education. Where do those fall in that definition of education institution? So I think there needs to be some clarification of the language in the bill to ensure that everybody who reads it is in the same spot.
Is it your 2 minutes, Pam?
Thank you for the opportunity to share.
Thank you.
And I'm willing to answer any questions even afterwards if folks want to.
Thank you. All right, we've hit 5 o'clock. For those who are waiting online, I'm going to please encourage you to call back in. We will be taking public testimony at 3:30 p.m. on Wednesday, May 1st. We will keep public testimony open and so that you have the opportunity to provide your public testimony via email, or you can call back in on Wednesday at 3:30 p.m. Once again, that email address for public testimony is senate.education@akled.gov. That's senate.education@akled.gov. We will close public testimony on Wednesday, and we will set an amendment deadline on Wednesday's meeting. This concludes our agenda for today. As I mentioned before, we will be meeting again on Wednesday, and we will possibly be meeting again on Friday to consider amendments. Are there any closing comments from committee members? Seeing none, I'm going to adjourn today's meeting at 5:01 p.m.